Evolutionary.org presents Evolutionary Hardcore Podcast with your co-hosts, Steve from the American Underground and Mobster from the UK Iron Den. Get ready for the most hardcore and underground info in the industry. And here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6...
Evolutionary.org episode 664 is coming your way. Today we have an interview with evil brother Big Red. So you can come on the forum, evolutionary.org, go to the forum link, top right, you'll see the search button. Click on the search button, then search for username. You're going to put in B-I-G-R-E-D and then underscore. And you'll see his thing pop up. And you could click on any of his posts. And if you look in his post, in his signature, you'll always have links to not just his current log, but all his previous logs. So that goes for myself, that goes for Mobster, that goes for anyone else on the forum. So that's a great way to kind of track the progression of everybody. And Big Red, he is an absolute beast. So if you take a look at his profile, he looks like an absolute monster. He's like he's a big, big, big dude, and he loves powerlifting. So we're going to talk all this stuff on this show. So this will be a great episode for those of you who are also into lifting heavy. So before we get to it, let me remind everyone, we are on Apple, we are on Spotify. Make sure you're slamming the like button. Make sure that you're subscribing. Make sure you're posting comments and all that good stuff. It helps pick us up on the different platforms. And his current log, as I pull it up here, is called Off-Season Powerlifting Cycle Log. So if you want to follow along on this one, he's 25 years old as of the start of 2026, 181 centimeters and 100 kilograms, which is 220 pounds. So he is a big, strong dude. His lifts, 270 kilogram squat, 155 kilogram bench, deadlifting 300 kilograms. So he is legit. So we're going to get into that. But let's start off on Mobster. Let me bring you in here to give him a thank you for coming on.
Yeah, so we like to start these shows by reminding listeners that guests like Big Red, taking time out of their day, and Big Red is, again, based in Australia, Steve, it's late at night, it's the end of the working week, they've been grafting all week, they've been busy all week, so taking time out of their day, 11, 12 o'clock at night, as it is right now for them, is a big deal for us, and we can't do these shows without people like Big Red doing that for us. So we always make a point at the beginning of these shows to show our gratitude for, on behalf of myself and Steve, the moderators, the bosses of the forum, the members of the forum who will be listening to the show, but especially to our non-forum member listeners all over the world. We must ensure, and we're going to do this now by thanking Big Red for taking time out of the day. So thank you very much, Big Red, for coming on this late in the day and doing the show for us.
No, I really appreciate the warm welcome and the kind words. Pleasure to be here.
No show without you, fella. So whenever you're ready, let's rock and roll, Steve.
Yeah, and let's get into your history a little bit growing up. And I'm always fascinating, you know, life takes us in different directions. Like, I never knew growing up, you know, that I'd be competing in, you know, half marathons and 5Ks and Ironmen. And then I never knew that I would transition from being a powerlifter to bodybuilding and then just being a gym rat. So it's just like different things sway you in different directions. Tell us about your childhood. Did you grow up playing a specific sport that you loved? And then did you kind of accidentally fall into weight training? And how old were you when you first picked up your weight?
So my history with sporting will probably come as a bit of a shock to some, and maybe a bit of judgment as well. But from probably about age 10 through to about 18, I actually raced like road and track cycling. So that was pretty much my whole teenage years was pretty just embedded with that. Like, I raced around the country in some national championships and stuff, and was in a little junior team based out of the state I was in. So that was, obviously a very different sport to powerlifting, but I think kind of, you know, give me a bit of an early setup in terms of, you know, that dedication and training and stuff like that, because that is a very time-consuming sport. That was hard work doing that at a young age, and that took up a pretty considerable amount of my childhood. And yeah, so I give that up probably would have been about 18. And then it was about 20 that I started in the gym. I kind of tried to make a start in the gym throughout my teenage years, but it was always kind of like consistent for a couple months, didn't go for 8 months and so on. You know, a couple failed attempts. But then it was kind of come around in a pretty weird way. So the dude who owns the gym and the team that I powerlift with, he actually was living across the road from me. And kind of, yeah, just got talking to him and got the idea. And I just went up to sign up at the gym, with just the intention of just training myself. And within my first week or so, someone talked me into signing up with them for some coaching. And I'd never really thought about powerlifting being a thing. And when I signed up with this coach, he asked me, "Are you interested in bodybuilding or powerlifting?" And I just said, "Oh, powerlifting." And we had a comp in mind in about 5 months after I started training.
And how long did you start seeing results? I know when I first started weight training, I was like, 14 or 15 years old. And one of the cool things that I first noticed was biceps. I was like, wow, I'd flex and I'd actually see a muscle. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. What were some of the first things that you noticed when you first weight trained? Did you, and what was your understanding of weight training at the time? Did you have any clue what you were doing because you were, someone else was helping you, or was it just like you were winging it?
Well, so before I started weight training, like obviously now, like you mentioned, I'm sitting at about 100 kilos now, and the heaviest I've been to about 109. But back before I started training, I was under 70 kilos. I was, between kind of 65 to 68. So I was skin and bones. But I put on a really substantial amount of weight, like really quickly, from obviously some would be muscle and some would just probably increase eating. But I think I went from around that kind of bit below 70 to about mid 80s, 85, 86, I think it was in like a really short period of time. So that was like, yeah, quite noticeable straight off the bat. Obviously, it slows up a bit after then. It's a bit more gradual. But yeah, I remember that first kind of 15 kilos was just bang on in a heartbeat. So
Wow.
that was really cool to get those results early.
The newbie
And
gains.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I always tell people. Like the newbie gains are almost
I
like the
remember
first.
when
So
I
what about
first
your
went.
strength? I was going to ask him, Steve, because he's a powerlifter. What about your strength? Did you have a lift that was outstanding straight away or came on very quickly?
Yeah, so when I first signed up with my coach, which, like I said, had only been training for a couple of weeks at that point, we tested all my one rep maxes on squat, bench, and deadlift. I think I squatted 100, benched 70, and deadlifted 140. So for me at that time, being skinny and pretty new, like that 140 deadlift, I think that kind of, to me now, that's obviously nothing. But at the time, I was thinking, all right, I've obviously got some kind of genetic ability, like maybe a little bit of advantage with deadlift, which is obviously still my strongest lift. So, considering my experience and the size of me, I didn't think I did too bad at the first attempts. Like obviously there's nothing special, but they could be worse.
Double body weight, man, more or less double body weight on the free plates aside for American listeners is not bad at all, fella. But for someone who's only been training a couple of weeks, it's a good indicator.
Yeah, for sure.
It
Remember,
occurred to me, sorry, the sport that you was doing before, the powder weight ratio, you have to be kind of strong and wiry, but you can't be heavy. There's no fellas doing the sport you're doing before that weigh 140 kilos riding bikes up and down the mountains and whatever. They're just not. You need to be kind of long. But I'd guarantee, Steve, the sporting background makes you competitive, and you was probably, as you say, holding your body weight back. So those newbie gains and that athletic background, Steve, must be an advantage. How many times have we had people on these shows and they've done some other sport before and then got into weight training? And he was quite good. He was going all over the country. So that's a good indication that you had some athletic ability, if nothing else.
And I
But
think as
see,
well,
yeah, go
I did
ahead.
go relatively well, but I was a little bit, I'd make nationals, but I was kind of at the back of the pack in them. So like I wasn't super high up, but I think that kind of that kind of laid the fundamentals for a bit of drive. Like I saw, what I did notice a lot from that sport is a lot of the ones who say in juniors under 13s, 15s, 17s, once the rest of the pack develops and everyone grows and stuff, they're usually the first ones to give it up. They've kind of hit their peak. So I think it almost works in advantage to not being super genetically blessed, because it highlights the importance of hard work.
You're still a young guy. What are some of
Yeah.
the things that you've noticed about your body changing, especially the last couple years or past few years, in
Sorry,
terms
Steve,
of
I was gonna make a joke about puberty here, but you're not that
little
Well, I
bit
mean, you know,
faster.
I could tell you for sure there's a big difference between 15 to 20 and then 20 to
Oh, Christ.
25 and then 25 to 30 to 30 and then 30 to 30. It's like a huge difference. What have been some of the things, maybe with your recovery, maybe with some, have you noticed anything yet, or you're still like, you know, because it's just like the younger guys, they just don't understand that once you start getting older,
Yes.
your training has to be adjusted. There's been some times like I get in my car and I'm about to go to the gym and I'm like, man, I'm hurting. Like, should I actually go? And it's just like, yeah, I'll go, but I have to adjust the way I train. Have you noticed any subtle changes over the last, months or years or something that you've noticed in the way your body has matured or whatnot? Anything?
There's nothing that really screams like drastically, but probably just what you said, like you learned to emphasize the importance of recovery and injury management, and maybe when you were 18, 20, whatever, and you had something was sore, you'd push through it, but now you kind of make that conscious thought, right? If I do this, if I rest this now, then I'm being good for the next 8 weeks, or if I push this now, then I'm gonna be injured in 8 weeks' time. So it's probably just a bit of a long-term thought
You
process.
have a few years because I didn't really, my body didn't really start shutting down until I was like 33, 34 area, which is pretty much the age we see by pro athletes. They start slowing down drastically, like, in any sport out there. So it's just like you still have time. So it's just like take advantage of the youth, but don't kill yourself in the process, So I think that's an important thing. Talk a little bit about the weight training. Maybe Mobster, ask him about some of the
I was going to ask
tempo or
you just,
whatnot.
let me ask you just about, I mean, this is again more, I suspect Big Red will know the answer to this, because I know the answer to this because we both lift rather than bodybuilding. So, for example, Stephen, in light of the question you just asked, when we get closer and closer and closer to our one rep maxes, we can't train more, we can't do more, we can't say, oh, we'll add more sets. The closer and closer and closer you get to what your body's capable of, you have to ease off the gas. So, has that applied to you, or are you still able to do a little bit more at this particular point? Again, this is because you're only 25 years of age.
No, definitely. So actually towards, like, as you guys probably know, and anyone else keeping up with the log, obviously had some kind of back issues in my last prep, and probably the last third or so of that, we switched up a training method. So we alternated heavy light, so squat and dead. So for example, say Monday, I'd hit me heavy, me heavy single and back down doubles or whatever squats, and then Thursday was like a light, usually for about 2 sets of 5, and it was a weight that was somewhat challenging but pretty cruisy, and then would flip that the next week. So you do your heavy deadlifts on the Monday, and then your light squats on the Thursday. And that was, I think, moving forward as we push into prep and comps, I think that's definitely going to be the way to go moving forward. Just having that one, only having that one heavy squat or dead a week, and then knowing that you've got 7 days to recover. And that light session also, I felt kind of, worked as a bit of a confidence boost, get the movement pattern well. Like you're doing
Yes.
that because you do the light one on the Thursday and then the heavy one on the Monday. So they're not 7 days apart as they normally would be. They're only, you're 4 days or whatever it is. So you'd kind of get in, say if you had a 300 kilo deadlift on the Monday, then, you'd maybe do your 2 sets of 5 at, 200 or something like that. So it was, a bit of weight, but not enough to put any real strain on the body. But you could kind of really try and perfect your form, and it was, almost worked as a bit of a warm-up set for that big session. So yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing in terms of adjustment of training that I noticed just previously. And yeah, like I said, I think we'll keep using that moving forward.
Sometimes, and we did a show yesterday, and one of the things that was Iron Rose yesterday, and Iron Rose was talking about listening to your body. So, ironically, and I'm no less guilty of this than you are, we sometimes have to almost fuck up, get injured, to learn where we can push and where we can't push. Learning the
Yeah.
patterns that you talked about, and then backing the fuck off, and then learning that we can't push all the time, that we can max this day, but we can't max twice a week, and so on. So, yeah, go on.
Yeah, I think that last comp as well was probably a bit of a wake up call as well, that if you've got a niggle at the start of prep, you're 100% going to have it at the end, if not 5 times worse, because at the start, usually your top sets maybe a triple or something, and then you've got some back downs of four or five, whatever, and it's a lot lighter weight. So then, when you're moving into those final weeks and you're pushing singles and PBs and stuff, yeah, if anything was a hassle in week 1, then it's definitely going to be a hassle towards the end. So that's why I've kind of, although it was disappointing to not get the result I wanted to because of that, I kind of took the good with the bad and thought, yeah, all right, that's kind of a bit of a wake up call. You want to be in.
I'm going to ask you two more questions. One was going to relate to your tempo, and I want you to explain to the listeners what that is. But the other one, before we do that, accessory work. So when I started lifting, and I'm sure the same applies to you, we bench, we squat, we deadlift. But at some point, we start to realize maybe we need to do more real delt work or back work to support our bench. Talk a little bit about the accessory exercises and the stuff that you do to support your bench and your squat and deadlift. Again, for the younger listeners that are just getting into lifting.
Yeah, so my days kind of work, although it's based around powerlifting, they kind of work as an upper lower split. So my squat day and my deadlift day will be two full lower days, and then maybe two, I usually have a main bench day where I'll do actual barbell press, and then the other one could be anything from the first movement could be anything from, a bench variation or something like a dumbbell incline press. But then they're essentially two full upper days. This block has changed a little bit, just because I've gone to 5 days instead of four. So it's a little bit of a kind of lower, upper push pull. So I've got like three upper days, but there are two, one that's pretty biased chest and the other that's pretty biased back, just because I think you couldn't probably manage the fatigue if you did three full upper days. But besides the last two blocks, it's just most of the time it's been 4 training days. So it'll just work as two upper days, two lower days. But yeah, definitely have a pretty comprehensive list of accessories. Like when weight gets heavy in prep, you're not going to go silly and you'll try and shrink it down to what you see important. But especially at the moment, yeah, I've got a pretty stacked list of accessories.
I think the thing is, when powerlifting first started, we literally, back in the 60s, all we did was the lifts. But we soon realized you need to work your weak points, the same as a bodybuilder. And there's a lot of crossover with the training and the information. Something, and I mentioned this already, you mentioned in your log tempo. So it's the speed, specifically the up speed and the down speed, the positive and the negative speed. So explain why you do tempo type work with some of your lifts and what it means to you.
I just think tempo is a real great way of all the little kind of things and cues that you've got to activate to keep steady and stuff. You can kind of, when you're moving the lift quick, you can kind of get away with not doing them. But when you're slowing eccentric or concentric, either one, down to, 3 seconds or whatever, you've really got to turn on everything. So at the moment I'm doing my bench is tempo on the way down. So, it's really using those lats to fight that weight, just keeping still, holding that form. And then deadlifts the other way around. That's on the way up, which I've done some tempo deadlifts a bit differently to that, like maybe like a tempo kind of to the knee and snap or slow on the way down. But this is just the full movement up is tempo. And I think that's been awesome for really, really emphasizing that brace for your trunk, really expanding. yeah, really expanding that brace just to hold that form otherwise, because at 3 seconds going up on a deadlift with, I think today I did them 185 kilos, so it's not much compared to my 300 kilos, but when you're doing a slow,
Slower, yes.
it surprises how much
You're
it
gonna feel
adds.
every fucking kilogram. If 185 again for the Americans is over 400
Yeah, it's
pounds,
a lot of
and
weight.
if you're doing it, pulling it, quote unquote, slowly, it feels like 300 fucking kilos, certainly 220,
Yeah.
230
So
kilos.
on that, what are your goals in terms of these lifts? And again, you guys can go, guys and gals out there, you can go on his log and see where his lifts are. What's your end goals on your big lifts that you want to hit in the next year, and then the end goal 5 years from now?
So end of this year, I'd like to total 800 kilos. So
Wow.
I've roughly figured that out to be a 300 kilo squat, 170 kilo bench, and a 330 kilo deadlift. So that's pretty, that's kind of my set goal. When I competed, not my last comp, the one prior to that, I went into that with pretty much two main goals, was to hit the 300 kilo deadlift and the 700 total. And I hit the 300 dead, and I think I totaled 702. So now it's kind of like the 300 kilo squat and the 800 total are kind of my
Wow, that's
main two
good.
goals.
Do you have any goals of competing in one of those? Because the powerlifting that we see in America, sometimes ESPN, maybe like once a year, they'll show the strong man, and they're like in Greece on some island lifting some big medicine ball on top of a thing, and they're doing it's kind of fun to watch. To me, it's more fun to watch than fucking bodybuilding, guys on stage in a bikini. I actually enjoy watching that. Is that something you would like to do one day, or you want to stick to more powerlifting competitions, in general?
I think the goal in terms of like competitiveness would definitely be powerlifting, but I would be, more than willing to have a crack at some strongman lifts. Like, I definitely give props to those guys because there's a strength aspect, but it's not as, rigid as powerlifting. We're very like steel, we're braced, we're
Yeah.
wrapped wherever. They've got to pick these round balls up and throw them over things and walk with things. So there's
Yeah.
definitely a bit of a mix of
I always cheer for the shorter dude, because I'm a shorter dude. There's always that short, strong motherfucker, and he almost wins it. And then at the end, some dude mobster's height ends up winning
Oh
the.
yeah, it's always going to be like that, man.
Yeah, but the
I mean,
short dudes are the ones that really, we bust our ass the hardest. So what's your
let me
favorite
just give you, sorry,
strongman?
let me just for the American listeners again, Steve, because that's the majority of people listening to this show. 300 kilos is 660 pounds. And just to give you an idea of what that looks like, that's seven or eight plates each end of the fucking bar. The problem with the strongman, Steve, as you say, well, not even a problem. Powerlifting, if you show it to the average person in the street, it's kind of boring. And I say this as a lifter because they can't visualize what seven or eight plates is like. If you said it was equivalent of having two fully laden fridge freezers on each end of a bar, they get it. So strongman is visually acceptable. Powerlifting is not visually. And yet when you and I lift, of anybody who lifts weights will understand that seven or eight plates each end of a bar for squatting or deadlifting is a shitload of weight. So let me just make sure that people listening to this show, Big Red is a strong motherfucker, and he would probably be great in the novice and intermediate stuff. But there is a learn and a skill set to some of the strongman lifts. But I think if he put his mind to it, especially when he's maybe getting close to 30, Steve, he'd probably do very, very well.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you too, what's your favorite overall strongman lift, and what's your favorite lift in the gym? What's of all your compound lifts? I mean, I've always honestly hated when I was competing, I hated clean and jerks, but I love the bench press. Do you have a specific preference that you love and hate?
I think I'd have to run with deadlift, as being my favorite. I'm trying to kind of force myself to love the squat because I think squats, it's hard, like it's daunting. I'm always, every session when you go into squats, you're nervous because, the bar's on your back rather than down on the ground. And it's just a process, especially in prep, like you're wrapping your knees and stuff like that. There's just a lot more that goes into it. So I think that kind of challenge daunting kind of feel of it, kind of makes me favor that a little bit. But I think if I had to pick, I'd have to stick with the deadlift. I think that's always, like I said, it was kind of my strongest at the start, and I hit that 300 kilo deadlift, was definitely, so far the highlight of my powerlifting career. In terms of strongman, I'm actually not super educated with the names of everything, but I do like the Atlas Stones. And then there's the one, I actually don't know the name off the top of my head right now, but they have the frame over them and they pick them up off to the side and the warp,
Yoke
and that's
walk.
it.
I
Yep,
like when
so.
they do the final, like it's kind of like an obstacle course and they're all like huffing and puffing at the end. That shit's funny. It's like
That's
they
cardio,
buff.
that's fuck.
I know.
Because
And it's just like
you
they're
gotta
not
run.
fucking runners and they're trying to do that. That just cracks me up every time. Let's get into some of the PED talk. And talk about some of the steroids that you have experimented with and which ones have been your favorite. And then talk
When
about which ones
did you start? Because you're only age 25,
I
you're a
was
hell of a
scared to kind of
lifter. When
ask
did you
that.
start? Yeah. But when did you get into it, and what was your first cycle, just out of interest?
It was when I was just trying to come start of 2024. Yeah, I think I pretty much started almost New Year's of 2024, which was, I competed naturally for quite some time, and in my head I always had that I was going to do it one day, but it was going to be kind of a lot further down the path kind of thing. And that's a pretty kind of sudden and rash decision, my first one. And like I had to say, I was probably a little bit uneducated too. My first cycle was actually Test and Deca, which was, I haven't touched a 19 nor since then. So, but doing a 19 nor, I think, first cycle is pretty stupid. But I was just kind of, jumped in a little bit quicker than what I planned to, and just took the advice of someone who I thought was educated and did that, and I had a great, it was an
They
awesome
may
cycle.
well have been older than you. They might have been older than you. So what suited them wouldn't suit you, for example.
Which I don't like. I didn't necessarily have any negative side effects. I think the Deca might have had some kind of small negatives kind of on the mental headspace, like a bit of anxiety and stuff like that. But in saying that, it was like I threw on heaps of weight my first cycle. And it went really well for me. But then since then, so that was my first one, and then so I've done two since then, and I've just stuck with Test and DHT. So the first one was Test and Primo, and then I finished 4 weeks on Anadrol, and then the second one was Test and Masteron, and they're the same, finished on 4 weeks of Anadrol. But on the last one, also included some growth hormone, but only between the kind of two to four IU, so just kind of a more four bed recovery assistance thing rather than anything
Do
anabolic.
you have any, and I know this because we've talked about it on a previous similar show, do you have any competition day protocols? For example, and we've talked about this on other shows, Halo testing used to be a one for lots of lifters, trend again, but just, and even myself, check drops the day of a competition when I was at my most competitive. Is there anything you do the day of a competition that give you that extra boost? Just out of interest again.
Yeah, so there's actually a lab in Australia who makes some pretty gnarly pre-workout oils. He's got two different ones. One has there is these are injectable, but have one's got Superdrol, Anadrol, and Devol, and the other one's got Test, no ester, trend suspension, Anadrol, and
No,
Superdrol.
wow.
Yeah, so they're pretty stacked.
That sounds like rocket fuel.
Yeah, you could almost have a shot of that and go out on the town, I reckon. But I've actually tried both of them. So I tried the one with just the three oral, Superdrol, Anadrol, and Dbol, my last comp, and then I tried the one before. And like I kept that for obviously very, very few sessions. I think kind of like the last maybe 2 weeks. 2 weeks would do it for me, kind of squat and deadlift, and then comp day. So really, for the whole prep, it was a handful at most kind of times. But yeah, that was that'll I think that'll always be
I was going to ask you, because of the stuff that, and again, younger listeners, we're talking about very short periods of time here, because these products are very harsh on the system, as you've just heard, a couple of weeks and competition day only. I was going to ask you, and this is more to try to explain to the younger guys thinking about coming into lifting. What we're looking at is peak performance. Talk a little bit now, if you don't mind, and this ties into the last topic. The psyche, the how you get your head around breaking records, how do you get your head around breaking PRs? 7.5 plates is the number that he wants at his next competition. And to put it crudely, it's a shitload of weight. But you want it. So not only are we gonna good nutrition, all the weeks of preparation and training, but the day of the competition, your headspace. So talk a little bit about that. What drives you to want to kick ass, break records, being a national standard lifter?
I think it's just that feeling, obviously, like the feeling when you're in there and you beat your own personal best, or even just have an awesome session. It could be the things as just as little as watching your video of your squat back and your form was perfect. It's just all those little wins and just the aggression you take onto there as well. Like, you're under that bar alone and you got to get yourself hyped up, especially mid last training situation, not being kind of, I was living pretty rurally, so I was kind of training by myself. So that required a lot of, different from the previous years to kind of hype myself up. But it's just that feeling. And like I said, I think my history with sports kind of has implanted that competitive nature into myself. So it's just a kind of desire to always want more. During that one prep, say your lifetime goals, hit that 300 dead, and you do it, you're stoked. But next time you're on the in the gym, you're already thinking about that 330 or whatever it is. So I think it's just a desire to be bigger, better. There's always another kilo that can be put on the bar, or another kilo
It's
that can put
weird
on the plate.
how is you and I, and I'm going to ask you this. So you give me an example, just a very quick question. How long would you say a prep is for a single powerlifting competition? 12 weeks, 16 weeks? How long do you prep for? Just as an example, quickly.
Probably you're pretty bang on there, between kind of 12 to 16. So previously they've been more like 12, but this last one I did my cycle, I did my cycle for 20 weeks. So then we ended up just kind of starting to prep a little bit early. And the first block was nothing too crazy, but I would still kind of count it as prep. But it was kind of a bit of a warm up block. So really, probably 12 weeks is the standard for hard into it, but I think there's nothing really to lose from going a little bit longer, like 12 weeks. Because when you're counting your deloads, like if you're deloading every however many weeks, and then your week before, you're not getting 12 squat sessions. That might work down to eight, which is not really many. So, especially say if we do what I spoke about previously, the alternating light heavy, because you're managing fatigue a bit better. There's no reason why you couldn't stretch that out. Stretch it out a bit longer, just as long as you weren't burning out towards the end.
One of the things I was going to say, this actually applies to bodybuilders as well, Steve. We spend, for example, 12 to 16 weeks, as you've just discussed, getting ready to go on stage, or in Big Red's case, stand on the platform. We spend all that time getting ready. We hit the numbers. We're happy, stoked that we've hit the numbers. And as Big Red just said, we go back to the gym the next fucking week, restart a training cycle, and we're already thinking of 15 or 20 kilograms more. So it's very momentary, but it is great when you do hit those kind of numbers. Something you mentioned in your log, and it's something again that the younger listeners, and I've even tried stuff like this in the past. You mentioned going for a Muay Thai session this week, and it was very humbling, I think was the word that you used, because of course it's completely different. So talk a bit about that, and maybe the benefits of trying other kinds of training and mixing stuff up as well.
I think probably for me the biggest thing is I'm always kind of up for a challenge and a new experience, whether it's Muay Thai or it could be just something, some adventurous kind of thing. I'm a very kind of new experience, out of the comfort zone kind of person. But on more on the training side of things, I think there's nothing to lose from diversifying your ability a little bit, even if powerlifting's your focus. You know, I'm sure everyone in the gym community can be guilty of ignoring cardio and stuff like that. So,
Yes.
and really, there's no better. I don't think there's anything harder than combat sports. Like I did a little bit of boxing maybe four years ago. So I do have a little bit of a taste of how hard that can be. But then that Muay Thai kind of brought in the real hard cardio. Like it was a pretty flat out hour session. So that was harsh. But then also the movements were so foreign. Like I said, I've thrown a few punches. I'm no expert, but I've thrown a few punches in previous years. But the whole, yeah, the kicking elbows, etc., with Muay Thai was, so yeah, that was kind of two laid on top of each other, the cardiovascular and then plus learning a new skill. I just, yeah, enjoyed the challenge of it. And you know, if you're doing that, you know, I kind of plan probably to do that once a week. So, you know, there's your hard cardio and then a bit of, you know, I'm
Yes.
sure there's some benefits, your mobility, like I'm pretty stiff through the hip, so I'm sure I can have something to gain with that. And just trying something new, learning a skill, and it's a good skill to have, I think, any kind of combat sport.
I'm thinking even for powerlifters, Steve, as he mentioned cardio, Big Red mentioned cardio there. Sometimes when you're lifting on a platform, you follow yourself. And I mean, you get minimum you're allowed typically, especially if you're following yourself, is 2 minutes. It's one thing to be third or fourth or fifth in a queue of other lifters that you're competing against in your body weight class. But sometimes when you're getting closer to the big numbers, you literally go out and then the next attempt is yours again. So you don't think you need cardio and lifting, but you do. You need to be conditioned. So something like this, Big Red, is great that you're challenging yourself, but also conditioning work is especially, I mean, I'm assuming you're lifting as a body weight. Is that correct? You're not a super heavy.
Yeah, I usually sit between the 100 to 110s.
And I think in story, Steve, as and again, listeners, the 100 to 110 is 230 to 242 pounds. And I would argue that outside the super heavies, who tend to be fat anyway, that's the biggest, most muscular class in powerlifting. So having a level of condition and a low level of body fat is going to be an enormous advantage for you. And especially as you approach elite, as you're already getting close to already elite levels for what you're doing, you're probably, and you'll know this better than I will, you're probably certainly regional, if not national standard for Australia in your body weight class. Is that correct?
Yeah, obviously there's still, you know, there's some pretty strong guys out there. So, you know, I wouldn't say I'm up to the top yet, but I'm definitely, definitely climbing up. There's some strong blokes out there. So there's always a few steps to go, but time will tell.
What are the age of the strongest dudes that you notice out there? How old are they approximately?
I would say on obviously you get some freaks like that are a bit younger, but I'd say on average, you see people kind of peak in that lot early 30s, you know, 32, 30, yeah, 30 to 32. I find that can be,
So without Mobster interrupting, because I know he's going to want to answer this, I'm
I
asking
believe you,
you,
something
why
correct.
do you think that is with the peaking of that age? You there, Big Red?
Oh yeah. Oh, sorry. I thought you were asking Mobster.
No,
No, he's asking you, mate.
no,
I don't
no,
believe
no.
you,
I
mate.
want to know your, that's why we brought you on. I want to hear your
What do you
opinion.
think?
Yeah.
I think it's just time in the sport at the end of the day. And like we said, you learn different things like fatigue management over time and different training techniques. And you know, it might even take these people three different coaches until they find one that works with their training style and ability and recovery. So I think really at the end of the day, it's just, time. Especially when you get to that later
Well, I
period,
mean,
you're not adding.
Mobster is still pushing a ton of weight at his age.
Yeah, 61.
So it's just like, you know, yeah, it's
There's
like
a, in
time.
lift, sorry, in bodybuilding, Steve, you very rarely see top champions over 40 years of age. But in lifting, and it's again, great one for the listeners here, and even for Big Red to look forward to the future. 35 to 45 is arguably your peak levels of strength if you work out, if you train. So he's only 25 and he's doing big numbers. He's got another 5 or 10 years if he keeps at it with the powerlifting, where he will be doing, all things considered, if just a few kilos a year, some massive, massive numbers 5 or 10 years from now. It's a big red. You're a big fella already. You're already a strong motherfucker. 5 or 10 years from now, you will be an absolute, you will be national standard if you keep bugging away. You will be good. Let me change the subject a little bit here, guys, and I made a note of this. Some of our Australian guests that we've had on, Steve, were on the FIFO, the fly in, fly out, and Big Red is one of those again. So you work in the mines. So I wanted to ask you two questions, actually. One related to training and the fly in, fly out culture, the work, and make whether that makes a difference. So something he mentioned in his log last week, Steve, when I was doing the notes. He was moving home or helping someone move home. Well, I think you was moving home on your week off. So, mate, one of the greatest stresses in life is up there with divorces and birth and death and marriages, etc., is moving home. So how much of an effect has work had with the fly-in, fly-out culture? And what about moving home during your week off? Talk about the effects on your training and how hard these two things can be.
Yeah, so I'll just give a bit of context of my work background. So the town which I'm doing my FIFO from now, last year I was pretty much based there full-time. And then just recently I've got that new job, which is a 2 week on, 1 week on roster. I think there's pros and cons being up there. I find it is easy to get in routine because, like, we're very rural, so there's limited distractions. Everything's very close together. We've got like a mess hall where you eat all your food, so you know your breakfast, lunch, and dinner all cooked and served for you, and everything's close by. So it is, although we're doing long days like 11 to 12 hours, it's like you're up in the morning, you go eat your breakfast, you got as much as you want, you work, and then so it's all very structured. There's no mates going down for dinner or doing this or parties on, or there's nothing up there. So in a sense, I think it is good because you got, you know, a lot of access to food and limited distractions, but then at the same time it's hot. There's long work days. So by the time you get your work day, your food, your gym, you're often cutting, you know, you're often a little bit short on sleep, that kind of thing. So, so this is actually my first week off with the new FIFO job, which not really a week off because I worked all week, plus moving into my new place. So been a bit more full on than anticipated, but I'm sure that's not going to be the standard moving forward. But I think that'll definitely be good. Like, my new job's probably a little bit easier too physically compared to the one last year, and then also having that week off, I think, after doing that prep last year, whereas you're doing a lot more physical work and up there pretty much full time, I think when I head into this one this year with that little bit more time off and slightly less taxing work, I think it's going to be
Some of our younger listeners, Steve, have this idea that if you want to be the best bodybuilder, the best weightlifter, the best strongman, you want a nice, easy job. But ironically, I've been my fittest doing physical jobs and semi-physical, even in my last job. So it can be done. And I think one of the other FIFO guests that we had on said that the food actually is a lot better than it used to be. So you can get some seriously good food in for free as part of the job, and especially if they bring in the good stuff in. So it can be done and it can be a physical job, but you can become a high standard lifter, a high standard bodybuilder by doing hard work as well.
Do you ever find like some silver or gold when you're mining, or a diamond or something, just put it in your pocket, or will they check you guys when you guys finish?
So I'm not, technically I'm not actually kind of in the mines. I'm a carpenter. So I do more maintenance, refurb work around the mine site, and in the town. The mining company owns a lot of the town, so it's more the carpentry work in the town itself rather than in the actual mine. So I say it's mine work because the town's kind of a mining town, but
You need to find that silver so you can use it on vampires to kill the vampires. Because that I learned that a couple of weeks ago. When you hit a vampire with
the
silver,
TV, no doubt. Them.
So it comes in handy.
He thinks Buffy's a real person.
So let's talk about as we finish out. Talk about your favorite guys on the forum, guys and gals on the forum who have been motivational for you, inspirational in your log, helped you out over since you've been on the forum. And how did you find the forum in the first place?
I found the forum in the first place. I was actually pretty active on UGL, and was purchasing through Core Farmer, and I approached at the start of my prep, I approached Core Farmer about sponsorship, and then he pretty much approached me about doing the log with Evo. So that was kind of how I got started on Evo. But yeah, it's been awesome. Like, I look for, I love the login. I love seeing all the replies. Like, it's yeah, it's unreal the support you get, and there's a kind of pretty select group of guys you can always trust on to be first to comment or comment on every single log you do, regardless that most of them are pretty the same, with maybe just 2.5 kilos added here and maybe a slightly different description. But yeah, they're always, it's, yeah, I love looking at the replies, and yeah, there's a lot of motivation around that. So yeah, I'm really blessed.
Any specific people that stand out?
I'm just having to scroll through now. Lev Butler, for sure. He's pretty active on there. He'd probably nearly have to take the number one spot. Copite 67. He's a pretty regular. Who else have we got on here? Those two have taken up a pretty big percentage of this last log. Harley guy, give him a shout out for sure. Dreamer. I feel bad because I'm sure there's a million people that are like, come on, dude, I've commented on each of your stuff, but I'm just kind of scoffing.
One of the things that we say, and a lot of people say the same thing, you have a log and it makes you train consistently, dedicated all the time, versus if no one was watching, if no one saw your log, you might have a slack day, you might have an easy day because you're only sort of doing things for yourself. But by having people come in and support you, by having people like Lev, for example, making suggestions, and by knowing that every single time you put up some numbers or a good workout, people are going to say, well done. It makes you keep plugging away. So even when you've had a hard day at work, or you're busy on your week off or whatever, you almost don't have an excuse to slack because the guys are there coming, come on, motherfucker, get your shit done. Let's see what you're like. We want to see you lift the big numbers in competition. So again, listeners, as much as Big Red, it's one of those things where we bang the drum on logs purely and simply because we know that if you didn't have a log or a diary, you might ease off. You might have, you know, I want to go out on a Saturday night, fuck training tomorrow, whatever. But because you've got to be consistent, you will be consistent. So yeah,
Yeah, well,
go on, Steve.
oh no, I was just gonna mention, even with this podcast, when I was a little bit slack with getting back to Steve, just because I had to figure out the times, and I had about two people make comments on why'd you pull out of the podcast. So it was even that. I was like, come on,
Well,
guys, give me a wait.
and which one of the logs do you really enjoy reading when you go on there? Any particular logs that you really enjoy?
I kind of just try and keep up with a lot of the Core Farmer dudes, just because, to be honest, I'm not probably as active on their reading as I would like to be, obviously, just with my busy schedule. Like, sometimes I forget even myself to get in there at certain times, but definitely just try and keep on board with a lot of the Core Farmer guys. But pretty much most of those guys that I've just listed through as the big supporters, like, pretty much all of them, I've kind of, yeah, kept up to date and with their logs. So it's hard to really pick one that I'm super focused on. I just kind of try and, yeah, share the love around.
Something that people don't always appreciate, especially if we're a young bodybuilder or we're specifically into powerlifting or whatever else, is that we learn from each other. We motivate by each other. So we might be motivated by one of the ladies getting lean, be motivated by the fellas in the wheelchair still being out there and kicking ass, so to speak. And we're going to be motivated by people like yourself, Big Red, when you go out and get the 330 kilo deadlift, when you go out and do the 300 kilo squat, because we know that's fucking heavy shit. One of those things that we like to ask as we get towards the end of the shows is, do you have any tips or suggestions, things that you've learned along your journey that someone doesn't have to make a mistake by because they've heard you give them a tip or suggestion that might help them with what they're doing?
I think probably the biggest one that comes to mind is if, say, someone's signing up to the gym for the first time is go straight into coaching. Like I said, when I first signed up, I was like, my head, I was like, all right, I'll do my own thing for a year or so and then look at it. And then I remember someone said to me, like, you're just wasting that time not doing it right. You might as well just get straight in. So that's probably the biggest thing I would say is just seek coaching straight off the bat. Food's another one, just eat enough food. Training with intensity, so they're probably the biggest thing, coaching, food and intensity and recovery. And just staying away from, things that might hinder your progress. Like we've all got our fun here and there, but think about the long term.
So listen, guys. Again, thank you very much, Big Red, for coming on. As us just now, it's great that we have different kinds of people coming on. We're all on different journeys, but the whole thing with Evolutionary is that we want to support you. We want you to make progress. I want to see Big Red hit those numbers I just mentioned. 330 kilos is a big fucking deadlift. No mucking around. It's very nearly 8 plates aside. That would be fucking awesome. Again, thank you very much, Big Red, for coming on. As always,
How's that?
listeners, please. Yes, sorry, fella. As always, listeners, please note we are not doctors and the opinions are ours. It is our view based on our experience and views on the topic, a podcast for informational purposes and entertainment only. The freedom of speech and the First Amendment applies.